Welcome to All the Bits, a fake radio show about board games, the community, and all the lovely, lovely bits. All the Bits is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network and is sponsored by Board Game Bliss, a store where you can find an amazing selection of games from around the world, bringing joy to you and your loved ones. Without further ado, here are your hosts, Sean and Michelle.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 77.
In this episode's bits, we'll talk about Marvel United, Almanac, The Dragon Road, Blockness, and Mercado de Lisboa. And I will discuss the BGG thread. How many unplayed games are in your collection? Do we have to do that one? And we'll get up to our usual antics of asking pointless questions, guessing over games, and drooling over bits.
And sharing some exciting information with you.
Ooh, what's our exciting information?
Well, we teased who knows how long ago episode
chicken,
or more.
Wow, wow.
Yep, we were working on getting a shirt out for all you bitsers because it's been requested, and we are happy to announce that the shirt is ready for pre-order on meeplescrossing.com.
Woo woo!
Yeah.
That's
so meeplescrossing.com.
That's meeplescrossing.com.
That's right. And a few notes about what makes these shirts really great, because they're all the bits, first of all. Mm. There's a great design, second of all. Mm-hmm. In all truthfulness, the shirts are made from Bella and Canvas, who have a strict no sweatshops policy. They are printed locally, which allows for some great quality assurance.
Yep.
And the artwork is screen printed, so it's like, you know, when you buy a shirt and it's got that like thick film of art. These don't have them. They're actually the ink is embedded into the fabric, so the shirts last a longer time. You don't get that weird cracking of the artwork, and they're actually super soft. Huh?
Yeah, that's the worst.
Yeah, and they're really soft to the touch, and I can attest to this. I have a few of their shirts now because I absolutely love them. They're very, very comfortable because they are so soft, and they do not look cheap, which is nice.
It's funny, I'm currently wearing not the Meeples Crossing board game related shirt, and not very comfortable.
So, no. Well, there you go.
And yes, as Michelle said, I have a number of theirs as well, and they are the thing I like about the Meeples Crossing shirts more than anything is legitimately how comfortable they are compared to like a lot of my other t-shirts. And I have way too many t-shirts and I find them super duper comfortable, which is huge.
Yeah. So check out the design. We'd love to hear your thoughts, and we're just really excited about it. So again, you can pre-order at www.meeplescrossing.com.
And that link will be in the links and the show notes. So, and you've heard us say it a couple of times. So, but if you do need it again, feel free to hit us up and we'll make sure you get that link and we'll link you directly. But it will be all over the place, the link to Meeples Crossing. And check out some of their other, if you are unfamiliar with them, really do check out some of their other shirts because they are really cool.
Yeah, I'm not a big Scythe fan, but I might need to get one of those mech shirts just because they're so cool looking.
Yep.
Speaking of cool.
Yeah. This is our Ask Me Anything bit, wherein we ask each other useless questions about this beautiful hobby. Can I tell you something?
Yes.
Speaking of Tim Allen, I was working with a client last week, and we started watching Tool Time videos, or Home Improvement. Is that what it is? Home Improvement? Because apparently she was really into Home Improvement and watching Home Improvement with her dad. And I was like, okay, we're going to go watch some of these on YouTube. And I was just thinking about, like, he makes so many different sound effects We could literally have like sound effects from Tim Allen for like every single
thing. I remember that.
Yeah, he does like all like every little thing. They're mostly various kind of grunts, like the huh type thing. But they're different.
Oh yeah, there's like a or something.
Yeah, they're all. He makes all sorts of other like iterations on grunts. It's very impressive. He was like, you know, the original all the bit sound itself sound effect.
There you go. And we've completely dated ourselves by making a reference that many people do not know. Probably, I would think.
Yeah, that's true. That's fairly true. Probably.
I'm hearing like I saw someone say they didn't know who NSYNC and Backstreet Boys were the other day. And I was like, oh boy, you know you're old when.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, Sean, I got a question for you.
Go for it.
Which three game designers would you invite over for a game night? Gosh. And which game would you play?
Which three game designers would I invite over? And which game would I play? Okay, I'm probably Eric Lang and Uwe Rosenberg and is like as weird as I can make things. Reiner Knizia.
Ooh.
And what would we play? We would play probably Telestrations or Time's Up. Probably Time's Up. Oh, four people, Time's Up. Yeah, Telestrations. We'd play Telestrations, yeah. Because it'd probably be pretty funny.
That would be an interesting mix of people, for sure. Yeah,
that's what I would be going for.
I think Uwe would be like, okay, draw a bathtub, and then he'd start drawing wheat. And then it would be like, okay, draw a bed. He'd be like, okay, don't draw a pig, don't draw a pig. And guess what? It'd be a pig.
Because and you'd have to make farming. Like, really cool characters for Eric Lang. They'd have to be like minis or something.
There you go.
And, I really like that one, that question.
So that was courtesy of someone on Facebook. I don't recall who, but I did.
Okay.
Yeah, I saw someone ask that question. I was like, ooh, that's a good question. Thank you to whoever posted that.
Okay, well, then because it was so awesome, that is the question I'm going to ask you, Michelle.
Oh, come on.
I was just going to do the random game generator, so that's going to be your question, because that's, yeah, if you could invite three.
I would definitely...
Surprise.
I would definitely want to have Stefan Feld. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't thought of Reiner Knizia, but I think he's pretty amazing. So I'm going to pick Reiner Knizia as well. Oh, and I'm going to say Uwe, but that's so it's so close. How about, I'm trying to think of one of the groups. I get really confused with all the Italian names, which is super bad of me.
Do you just say Italian?
Yeah, because there's kind of a design house, and I always, I find I get confused because they work on different projects, but a lot of them they work on the same projects. Hang on. Virginio Gigli. There you go. And we're going to play my favorite Stefan Feld game, Bora Bora. For sure.
So predictable.
I know. Hey, at least I'm consistent, all right?
That's true. All right. Well, I'm sad that I'm not doing the thing, but that's okay.
What's the thing?
The thing, oh, the you know?
Random game generator?
That's fine. Yeah, I'm going to start posting these on like Facebook or some sort of social media and my very frequent interactions on there to see what people say.
Okay.
Just so I can use it more.
Okay. That sounds good.
I won't have to waste this precious space here.
It is precious. I agree.
It is so precious.
All right.
Well. Do, 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 do,
do.
Do.
Do,
do, do,
do.
Do,
do, do, do, do, do. This is our guess the game bit. Wherein we give each other vague, then specific, then super obvious clues from the Board Game Geek. To guess a game, and we ask that you guess along with us.
I'm changing my game at the last minute here because I feel
like
it's way too obvious.
I just have to think of what's popular right now. And
I changed it. I feel like it's way too obvious, but I feel like you're probably going to ask me. All right. You ready? I'm going to start first here. There's no way you're going to.
Oh, great. Okay. Setting me up for failure. Thanks, Sean.
Like, wow. It's ranked 43rd overall. Hey. Okay. Here we go.
Mm-hmm.
Game came out in 2019. And is currently 43rd overall on BGG and has a rating of 8.2 and is 1 to 4 players and an average playing time of 45 to 90 minutes with a weight of 2.82.
It's lighter than I was expecting. Is it Takenu? I don't think so. I think that's heavier.
No.
2 years ago.
To go.
Okay. Wingspan? No. Wingspan?
No.
Oh, that's been out longer.
Great, thank you. It's a good guess, though. All right. I'm going to give you some mechanisms here.
Okay.
I'm going to start with mechanisms. It's a cooperative game. Deck construction. Hand management.
It's not Gloomhaven. Is it Gloomhaven Jaws of the Lion?
It is not.
No. Is it Atlantis Rising?
It is not. It is scenario / mission / campaign game.
Arkham Horror 3rd Edition? No. That's way longer than 45 to 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know a lot of cooperative games. Okay.
Nip not the right track, though. Nose is pointing in the right direction.
Is it match? No, that's still also very long. Okay.
It's a card game. The category is card game.
And okay.
Collectible components. What?
Keep talking.
Last category. Comic book / strip.
Okay, so it's like based on, is it a superhero or something?
Maybe.
Oh no, I don't know any of those. Is it Marvel United?
No.
I don't even know what
you were sniffing up the right tree with when you said Arkham Horror.
Arkham? Yeah, I'm trying to think of what else came out that was Cthulhu-like.
Oh, it's nothing Cthulhu-like.
Oh, it's not Cthulhu.
Bad hints here.
Oh man, 2019 co-op.
It's a living card game.
Oh. Oh, is it Keyforge?
No.
Oh, come on. Just make it Keyforge. Let's just say it's Keyforge.
It is from Fantasy Flight Games.
Okay. I don't know. Okay. I'm trying to think of their. Okay. It's not Arkham Horror, the card game. Is it?
It is not.
No. Okay.
But you're in the right family of games.
I don't know.
Marvel. I don't know. Marvel.
Champions. What? I don't know the Marvel game. There's Marvel Champions, Marvel United, and Marvel. Legendary. Marvel Legendary. Okay.
Oof. It is ranked 43rd, the 43rd game overall.
I didn't even know that was a thing. Do you play it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? I'm sure you've talked about it. I apologize.
Yeah. You really pay attention to what I talk about, don't you?
I do. I just get confused, honestly, with all the Marvel. Like, listen to that. There's three different Marvels. Like, I'm supposed to know the difference between them. Mike.
All right. Sure.
Marvel Legendary. Didn't that one just get the Hulk out? Just making stuff up. I have no clue. But I do. Now I remember. I think I remember Rotto and Roy Candidate talking about some new character deck. And I'm assuming that's the one you're talking about.
Hulk came out a fair bit ago.
It was Black Widow or something.
Black Widow came out a fair bit ago.
Oh, never mind. Okay. Guardians, I don't know what I'm talking
Guardians
about.
Guardians of the Galaxy just came out for this. But you're on the right. I mean, you've obviously heard that they were out. So, yes. But.
All right. Well, here's yours. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
1991. Current wow. rating. Yeah. 7.6 with 13,000 ratings.
All right.
Plays four. In just, 60. Just four.
That'd be four.
And the community thinks it's should be four and best at four, by the way.
Oh, okay. So
60 minutes.
60 minutes, 1991. Okay.
Yeah, weight of 2.34.
Okay. I have no idea.
All right, let me see.
But it only plays four.
It. Yep, that's it.
Only plays four. Okay.
Only plays four. It is a card game.
He plays four. Okay.
I'm trying to find things that won't give it away.
Not Millborn. That would have been a long
time. Oh, that's such a terrible game.
Is it?
I played it growing up, and then I played it again in my 20s, and I was like, this. I don't know. It felt like super random to me. It actually upset me. All right. We got some hands.
Uno you could play.
Yes, but Uno can play more than four.
I don't know. Okay.
This is a team-based game.
It's a team-based game.
So those four people are broken into teams.
Two versus two?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There's hand management.
Yeah.
There's predictive bid. And there's ladder climbing.
Teach you?
There you go.
I teach you, but I have to charge. I'm so funny.
Terrible. Terrible. Do you like teach you?
I hate it.
Do you like teach you?
No.
No?
Can't stand it.
Really?
No, I don't like it. It's just, I'm really bad at it. And I feel like I've had some not great experiences playing it.
Mm-hmm.
And teach you is one of those games where if you play with people who are really good,
mm-hmm.
and you're not really good or don't mm-hmm. have much experience, you don't have a chance in HE Double Hockey 6. So that's kind of been my problem with T2, is that I've never really played it with like people kind of at my own level, which is
gotcha.
Maybe I would enjoy it more. I don't know.
Yeah, it is one of people who love T2 are like usually pretty into T2.
They're very intense and very good at it.
I really like it. I love trick-taking games and ladder climbing games.
I usually
and I've only had good experiences, but I've only played. I think I've only played like twice.
Mm.
So yeah.
I've probably tried it like a handful of times, right? Because I do. I love trick-taking games and I love ladder climbing games, so I should really like it. But I don't know. I do have a deck somewhere.
Yeah, I do too.
But
yeah.
All right.
Well, pew. You think we would have dropped a better beat by now? You know what I mean? Like, how many pew pews have we done? And they always just sound like complete crap.
I'm assuming I'm going to watch more home improvement segments tomorrow. So I will hopefully learn something from Tim Allen and then. Maybe he does some sort of laser thing. So,
oh great!
This is our rapid laser like reviews, wherein we explain games poorly and then tell you what we think of them after a play or more using our super official scale of
one. That would be a hard no. Two, meh. Three, I mean it's fine. Four, tis a gooder. And five, it's got the spark.
It's got the spark.
Spark.
Do you know my first pew pew is that I'm going to be talking about?
Marvel United.
And yes, and that is very much not rapid fire because I have played this game well over 50 times already. So
crazy.
That is going to be my first pew pew that I talk about. And you can probably guess.
Five.
But let's do my preamble here first. But yes, Marvel United, which came out in 2020 and currently has a 7.7 rating on BGG and ranked 785th overall, Plays 1 to 4 players. The community on BGG says best at 3. Plays in about 40 minutes and has a weight of 1.88. Designed by Andrea Cerveso and Eric M. Lang, with art by Edward Guetin, and published by Simon and Spin Master Games. And Marvel United is the latest game, latest Simon minis game, where you take on the role of Marvel superheroes fighting against Marvel villains. Shocking. And it's got, we'll talk about that after. I'll tell you what you do in the game, first of all, and then we'll kind of get into the figures and the minis. But what you are doing in this game is you are taking on the role of a Marvel hero, and there are many to choose from, depending how many expansions you have, or if you have the core box or whatever. And what you are doing is, it's a card game. You have 3 or 4 cards in your hand to start, and you are playing cards that have basically 3 different symbols on them. So you can more or less in this game do 3 different things. You can punch, you can move, so each character has a little chibi style superhero figure. You can punch, you can move, and you can do a special action, and that's a star. And what these things let you do is the movement lets you move around the board. There are 6 different locations, so you move around the board. The punch lets you either punch a henchman, a thug, or a villain, if you can punch a villain. And the special action, or the star, lets you rescue a bystander or put a token on one of the location cards. And you are basically doing these 3 things. Your deck of superhero cards, which it's like 10, 12, or 14 cards in it, I can't remember offhand, has some combination of these 3 symbols on them, in addition to a wild symbol, which can do any one of the 3 things. And then, depending what character you are, you usually have 3 cards that have some sort of special action in them, or some sort of special ability. Depending what character is, some might have more. And those will do something as well. Usually, when you have something that has a special power, it might have, you know, it might only have 1 symbol on it, or it might just have like a move or 1 star or something. It's not necessarily going to have 2 symbols. But what you are doing is you are playing these cards from your hand with the symbols. You are playing them in the storyline, which is the board. You are playing them, and then you get to activate whatever the symbols are for your card, as well as the card before you, the superhero card before you. So let's say the card before you has 2 wild on it, and you play a card with 2 wild. You get 4 wilds to do whatever you want. So what you are doing is, to start the game, you're going to have 3 turns. The heroes get to lay 3 cards, and then you flip over a card from the villains. And what the villain is trying to do, the villain is trying to KO you. Usually, the standard is KO you as many times as possible. Because once you get to the point, when you are damaged in this game, you take a card from your hand and you put it under your deck. That's how you're damaged, but they're trying to damage you as much as possible. So you run out of cards, and that's kind of the base standard. But then there are other, you know, Red Skull, for instance, who comes in the base game, has some sort of track that he's trying to get to the top. There are other ones who try and put like these other tokens in play. They progress. All the villains are fairly different, but the standard is they're trying to basically KO you as many times as possible so that you run out of cards and you have nothing to draw, and then you lose. So they play one, then you have 3 cards that you lay, and then they play another one. And when they're playing cards, they're kind of doing a few different things. They are doing their, usually they move to a different location. They do their BAM effect, which again is usually going to kind of deal damage to you, that sort of thing. They're also going to place either thugs or bystanders on different locations. And these are going to probably, these are going to fill up the spaces. So as soon as you kind of fill up all the available spaces on any location with thugs or bystanders, that's why you have to fight and rescue them. You get something called an overflow, which kind of contributes to the supervillain winning, which will help him win even faster. So that's why you gotta rescue these guys as fast as possible. They're gonna do that. So you're gonna go like this until you meet one of three different conditions. There are three different conditions on the board. There's you rescue nine super rescue nine bystanders, beat nine thugs, or eliminate four locations. So there are these location cards. They're usually either a henchman or they do something bad to you that come up on the location. And so you either got to damage the henchmen enough times to get rid of them, so deal like four or five damage to them, or you got to put either whatever the tokens are. So usually in the core box, I think they're mostly three tokens. You got to put three star tokens on them. Then once you get rid of those, you also get some sort of power from the location if you end your turn there, which is nice. But once you've met one of those three criteria, then the supervillain card pops over every two turns. You still can't damage the superhero. You can't damage the supervillain. You can't damage the supervillain until you've actually met two of those criteria. So eliminate four of those location cards and then beat nine thugs. Then you can go hit and attack them. Plays out, if you win, you gotta get rid of all the supervillain's damage. That's pretty much the game. It plays really quickly. It's got really, I adore the minis in it. It's got really nice minis that, I will be completely honest for you, to you, have nothing to do with the game. It is not a mini game. You do not need these minis at all for the game. It is a card game. But the minis are so, at first I was like, when this game first came out, I really didn't pay much attention to it. Because it's like, oh, I'm a purist. I know all these characters and I know all these things. And why would there be Marvel? Why would there be superhero and supervillain chibi? You know, so it's like that cutesy, cartoony, big head or small body, puffed up look. Why would there be these figures for it? Who needs them? They're not really going to be that good. And then I started seeing more and more people get them when the game delivered. And then I started seeing people paint them. And then you kind of look at them, and what's neat, I guess, you know, what's neat about the whole chibi art style, and I'm not really familiar. I know they had, like, was Arcadia Quest and a couple other in that line of those chibi miniatures. But what's really neat about the whole chibi style for the miniatures is it really brings out the details, and they look really nice, despite the fact there's a lot of flat surfaces and a lot of, you know, there's not a ton of indents and different things on them. They look so good, which is really nice. So, yes, I landed up acquiring a complete set of it, a complete Kickstarter pledge from someone of the game, because I put that again. If I would have backed it, life would have been a lot easier / cheaper, but that's okay.
And the Kickstarter is really about getting all those characters, right?
It's very much so. You know, the core game, which I will say, you know, the core game, you can buy the core game is like exclusive, I think, to Walmart and Amazon, and it's $30 and you get like 8 or 10 characters. I think you get, you know, you three supervillains and 6 or 8 heroes in it, and you get all the locations and everything you need. And I think that's a fantastic value for kind of what you're getting in that box. But then there's, you know, because it's CMON, they had tons of all these Kickstarter exclusives. And there were 6 different expansions that you could only get through Kickstarter. So depending what you wanted, you know, and this is, and I was watching, and I think they made a really good point, and I'll give it to them. I was watching on the Dice Tower, they do the like 4 corners or 4 squares with Mike Delisio and Tom Vassell and Z and Roy, and they all talk about the game, or, you know, and they were talking about Marvel United, and obviously, as I think everyone knows by now, Tom Vassell's completely infatuated with it, and they all seem to really love the game. But they were talking about how, like, this is one of those cases where more is actually good, because a lot of times we say with games, more isn't necessarily good. But with this, because everything is so different, all the characters, you know, you wouldn't necessarily think when you have you know, a deck of cards. And really the only difference between the characters are those special power cards. But it makes a difference because it's just enough that it makes each character feel different. You know, the Wasp, who comes in the main game, she moves around the board a lot. You know, a Punisher is like boom, 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 hit, 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 really strong. And then the supervillains all feel really different. And that's why, like, if I had no extra heroes with this game, I wouldn't care. It's the villains that I think really make the game unique, because the villains all feel, at least to me, completely, completely different. So I am glad that it was expensive. And you can make the argument that you're really just paying all this money for the minis, which you are. I'm not going to try and deny that for a second. But I'm glad I did get, because as I mentioned, I played 54 times now. And that's 54, like, actual games of this game, not necessarily, you know, just putzing around with it and playing it. I painted a few minis that I'm looking at these ones on BGG that are nowhere near as nice as these. But I think the game is absolutely amazing. I think it's great for what it is. It is not a heavy game. I was complaining to my wife earlier, because I was playing earlier with my daughter, and I was complaining to my wife, you know, the problem with this game is there is a lot of setup and teardown for what's essentially, you know, a 30 or 40 minute game. So that's my only issue with it, but I part of that might be, we've talked about this the last few episodes, I feel like my daughter is enamored with this game and absolutely loves it. And I see it says age plus 14 plus on here. She's 4.5 and knows almost all the characters by heart. You know, she might not be able to read what's on the cards, but because she has the memory of a 4.5-year-old, I literally tell her once or twice what the cards are. And she knows, like, she can already tell you that her favorite character is the Wasp, because the Wasp moves around the board a lot and could pick up other heroes and take them somewhere else. And she could tell you which are her favorite characters and why, and which villain she doesn't like facing because of what they do. And, you know, so that's part of it. You know, but I played it. My wife has played it too a few times, because it's so simple, and the degrees of variation as you're kind of adding on to it are not that much. That it's really hard to learn. It's definitely a 5 for me. It's definitely got.
I can hear that.
Yeah, it's definitely. Mm-hmm. I definitely given me the spark. I don't think all the, like I mentioned, like, I like having all the minis, all the different ones. I don't think, like, you know, I think the Sinister Six expansion, like, if any of you are out there being like, oh, I'm going to get this game, or I got the core box, I'm going to track down the expansions, I would say, like, if I had to, I'd like the Sinister Six expansion, because it adds a complete new mode of play to it that's really good, where you fight all the villains at the same time. That is definitely a must. I think the Infinity Gauntlet one is probably a must, you know, if you want a must, because, you know, again, you get Thanos and you get all, it's got a different mode where you fight four villains, but you fight them in succession, and it gets harder because they all help Thanos. The rest of the expansions are really, at least I found, like, the different modes and stuff in them, they're not really great. I feel like it's just if you like the characters. You know, if you really like Guardians of the Galaxy, get the Guardians of the Galaxy one. If you really like the Thor movies, they're really all just based on the movies, right? If you really like the Thor movies, get the Thor one, etc. But I think if you were, like, to track down any expansions, number one would be because I've had this question a lot from a few people who know I really like the game, is that, yeah, that Sinister Six one is really good, makes a huge difference. And you get, and I like those two expansions because they're all villains. And like I said, the villains are kind of the important ones for me. So, but I don't think you need all the expansions, and I do think that it's a game you could get a lot of value out of just that core box as well.
Good.
So, yeah, that's my Marvel United, which is...
It's funny, because you did bring it up last episode, and I was like, I'd never heard of it, and then it came up on the marketplace, and I bought it because my daughter also loves superheroes. And I thought, and she's pretty good at cooperative games. They're so great to play with kids, right? Because you can make it work.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So I picked it up. I haven't played it with her yet, but I think she's really gonna like it.
Yeah.
We'll have to when COVID's over, we'll have to get together, the two of them, and play. Yeah. That would be so cute.
It would. We could video it. But Adora was telling me how she really wants to teach someone how to play the game.
Aww.
because she's taught her mom, she's taught her grandmother online, but she was like, when we can, I really want to teach someone how to play the game.
Oh, that's so sweet. So,
yeah. That's Marvel United, my first pew-pew.
Nice.
I don't know what pew-pew is going to give me this amount of spark.
Yeah, I love when you get so excited about a game. It's That's awesome. All right. Well, my first pew-pew is from my next up from last episode. So this is Almanac the Dragon Road. This came out in 2020. Has a current rating of 7.6 on BGG with 143 ratings. Plays 2 to 4 in 60 to 90 minutes and has a weight of 2.13. It's designed by Scott Olms and the art is by Chris Beyer and Jackie Davis. And the publisher is Colossal Games. Mm-hmm. So this is a worker placement game where you are basically collecting resources to either sell them or turn them in for contracts. But what makes this game very unique is the fact that the board itself is a book. Mm-hmm. And what happens is each page you place your workers, and then when you've placed all of your workers, you have a peek at, it's like a choose your own adventure. There's two different pages you can go to, and they give you a little bit of a sneak peek, like which resources will be most available, mm-hmm. which resources you can sell for the most, and then like a little description and a little image, and you bid to make the decision. So whoever has the highest bid actually pays the smallest bid, which is interesting. And then that's the page you go to. And each page is unique in terms of its rules. Now, it's not overly complicated. Mm-hmm. So it's like, for example, on this page, you can only place a worker on an island once. So maybe there's 8 islands. So you have to make sure to go onto different islands. Or like there's somewhere you have to balance out, so you can't have like 5 workers of all players on one side and only 1 on the other. There's one where you have to follow bridges, lots of different little things, but nothing complicated. Mm-hmm. There's also usually some form of cardboard item, usually that comes with a page, and sometimes it's buying dragon tokens. Sometimes these tokens, especially early on, will give you advantages throughout the game. Like they might give you income at the beginning of every round, which is a page turn, et cetera, that sort of thing. Again, very straightforward and very simple. So you're not fiddling or going over a bunch of new rules every round. Like it's pretty streamlined. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing you're doing before you turn a page is you have an encounter. So there's A, B, C, D, E. So there's 5 rounds in the game. And after round 1, you do an A encounter.
My beer went up my nose as you were doing.
A encounter, and then you do a B encounter. And these encounter cards are often, they have a little bit of narrative, but it's very minimal. Like think Fister Maracaibo style narrative, a few sentences. And then usually the person who bid the most gets to choose an option, or sometimes the players both get to choose. Sometimes you'll have an encounter. So there are battle numbers that you have that you try to increase throughout the game so that you don't have bad things happen during the encounter. Sometimes it's just a matter of choosing from 2 different options in terms of getting something. It's pretty straightforward. There's really nothing revolutionary there. So you go through this kind of choose your own adventure, and the game ends at the end of round 5 when you've gone past and you've done your E encounter. So that's basically the game. There are, like I said, most of the worker spots are getting new contracts, fulfilling contracts, getting resources, selling resources, that sort of thing. You do have a caravan, which is where you place your resources, and your caravan has limited spots. So one of the things that you spend your money on, which is points as well, one-to-one ratio, is you can purchase more caravan size, which gives you also more workers and more spots to hold resources. And those cost resources as well. So it's usually resources and money. You can sell, you also use your resources to sell. So different pages have different values. So, you know, a yellow resource, for example, might sell anywhere from $2 to $5, I think is the average.
Okay.
Depending on the page that you go to. And again, dollars are one-to-one ratio. So if you're selling, you know, a bucket load of yellow resources for a lot of money, that's a lot of points. And then you also get points for fulfilling contracts. So contracts are pretty straightforward. They would be what you would expect in that you provide a number of resources and in return you get a number of points. However, the contracts also have special powers. So, you know, if you have two of this color, you can use it as another color resource, which is the most common one. I can't remember any other ones, but they're everything is pretty basic, and that's the weight of 2.13 definitely reflects it.
Okay.
And yeah, so that's the game. It's a definitely like a points galore. Like you end up with hundreds of points, which is kind of fun, you know, like it's, I don't know, points are good. Why not? The contract cards, like I was saying, they're really basic and they're also not very varied. Like I found that there was only, I don't know, but I would say like only like 3 to 4 maybe categories of different types of bonuses that you can get from it. And I feel like that was a bit of a miss. Like I feel like those could have been some really cool ways to pump up the game a little bit and make it a little less generic, if you will.
Okay.
The bits themselves are very standard. Like it's you're just getting cardboard tokens and cards and they're all fine. The book is done very well. The pages are very, very thick. I did upload some photos of them and you can see just how thick they are. The art is very vibrant. It's cartoony, but it's vibrant. It's gorgeous. And of course every page is different, which is lovely.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a really good job of the insert. Cause as you can imagine, you're going to different pages every game and the pages have different bits, which could be a bit of a nightmare. Think like Legends of Andor, but not as much.
Okay.
But what they did with their insert is they actually give you stickers. So there's a number of compartments and they give you stickers to put on the compartments that tell you which pages are related to that compartment. So it's super easy. You're like, oh, I'm on page 2. Okay. You look at your insert, pick page 2. So really well done from that regard, like just, yeah, thinking about the experience. And I don't know about the rule book because mine was missing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, mine was missing, which very rarely happens.
Yeah, weird.
Yeah, but that's okay because it was on BGG and it's a very straightforward game. So that's fine. One of the kind of complaints for me, like it's not a big deal, but it's a really tall box. Like it's like, power grid size.
Okay.
And I find those sometimes hard to fit. And I just thought it was a weird choice. Sometimes the value of a game, like if the game is not that great and it has a really big box, there's a bigger chance of me getting rid of it. Right. So
yeah.
I was not super enthused about that. But if you don't care about box sizes, that doesn't matter. I bought this game because I was just super in love with the idea, right? Like, I love seeing new ideas in the hobby, and I love exploring the different thoughts that come out and mechanisms. And yeah, I just like the discovery aspect of this hobby. So that's why I really wanted to try it out. I know we've had the Coil books now for a while. Like, we saw it in Near and Far. We saw it in Sleeping Gods, Forgotten Waters, is it?
Yeah, Forgotten Waters has it, yeah.
Yeah, Plaid Hat's done it. But I don't think we've done, like, a worker placement choose your own adventure type. So I definitely give this game props for being unique. And I think it does it well. I think that the idea, like if they'd sat down and said, hey, I want to do a work placement game and this is the idea behind it, I think the execution was quite good. My only complaint really, like it's light and it feels kind of predictable. Like it's, again, it's one of those things where if you're new to the hobby and you haven't played a ton of games, or you just like really light games, this would be probably pretty good. But it's almost like, yeah, I've seen this before. Aside from the book part, because that's super unique. But the rest of it is like very, very basic, mm-hmm. In terms of design, which maybe it needed to be to make the book work. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I would love to see a designer take this and go next level with it. Mm-hmm. Make a heavier experience. That would be super cool. Mm-hmm. I know there's been talk about luck being an issue because you don't really know what the future holds, but I don't know with this weight of game, it's like, I don't think there should be much expectation around that. And it's pretty clear like what's coming kind of in the next round. I feel like there's enough, like, it's not like you're going to get so many resources that if you don't know end game, you can't really do a whole lot. I don't know. I feel like it's the right amount of luck for the weight of the game and the length of the game, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. So I am very glad I got to play this. I think it's a really charming experience, and I do applaud the innovation. Mm-hmm. I do expect that the charm will wear off. And like I said, I'm looking forward to kind of seeing, I'm hoping somebody takes this and kind of and brings it to the next level. So yeah, solid, fun, cute, charming, worth a play, just not necessarily groundbreaking, mm-hmm. or interesting in terms of like using your brain, I guess.
Well, sounds like my type of game.
I know. I feel like I make games sound worse than I think they are, but I'm giving it a 3. I almost gave it a 4 just because it's got that. It's got the cool idea of the choose your own adventure mm-hmm. pages. I think Sean, this is your type of game, to be honest. Like, it's a good weight for you. It's
oh, colorful, well, thank you.
Fun. No.
Pretty colors, Jazzhands.
Okay. All right. I'm just going to stop talking.
Yeah, just a while. That's a 3. So I looked up this game after. Well, I think I was aware of it, but I really looked up after you mentioned it last episode. And yeah, that's the feeling I got. And the reason I didn't pick it up, you know, it's the type of game I would love to play. You know, your copy if we ever got to play games again. And then let you spend the money. I thought it was like fairly expensive for what it was.
It is, yeah.
Of experience it was, and I was like, I don't know if it's, you know, I have a number of other games that could probably meet. And I really love I love the whole book thing. I think that's the future of where we're going for a lot of games, and I think what you said is definitely gonna happen at some point. There will be heavier games, or there'll be more strategic games. I think that is going to happen, but for what I was reading about it and for what the MSRP and even, you know, getting it through a hobby game store for what the game costs, I was like, I don't know if this is a game I need to own, was my kind of feeling through it. But
yeah, that's fair.
And I do look forward to it. I would really like to try it, because I'm
it's, I mean, nice. Like it is. It's nice. It's nice and charming is how I would describe it. Yeah.
Yep. Cool. All right. My next pew 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 is called Blockness. I like how I said block like that. That's horrible. Which came out in Blockness came out in 2021. Designed by Laurent Escoffier, with art by Christine Alcouf and Simon Ducci. Published by Blue Orange Games. Plays 2 to 4 players in 15 to 20 minutes with a weight of 1 on BGG. And this is a abstract game that was actually sent over to us from Blue Orange Games for the purposes of this review. So just letting you guys know that. But this is a it doesn't look like it from the box. Like, it's got a really pretty, vibrant comic booky cartoony box, but this is a soulless abstract game. Which is a weird description. I don't think I was expecting that, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it is a very abstract game. What you are doing in this game is you are Nessie or Loch Ness monsters, and you're sticking your heads out of the water. And what you are trying to do is each person has a grouping of pieces that I don't think you can actually attach them all together, but they're supposed to be kind of like the Loch Ness monster. And what you are trying to do is you are trying to kind of lock in or block, so to speak, your opponent or opponents from being able to play a piece. So the game kind of ends when player can no longer put in any more pieces, or they've used all their pieces. And what's neat about this game, and we talked about this before, is I always love games that use the box as part of the board. So this kind of does that. You have in the box, there's the insert, which has a bunch of peg holes in it. And it's got three different shades of blue, depending how many players you are. So if you're playing two player, it's a smaller one. If you're playing three player, it's a little bit bigger. And four player, it's the more blue one that gives you all the spaces. So there are less spaces depending how many players. And what you are doing is you start with a piece that has your head and tail on it. And then every time you place a piece of your monster in there, you need to place it either adjacent to the head or adjacent to the tail of your monster. And it's got little snaps, so you snap off the head or the tail and you put it on that next piece. And you have to place it adjacent. And what you are trying to do is you're trying to kind of go over, or you're trying to go under or beside the other people who are playing, who are trying to do the same thing. So it makes for some interesting gameplay in that you kind of have to navigate. You have this really tight space and you have to navigate putting your pieces in. And that's where the abstract comes in, right? You can probably close your eyes and imagine playing this with just some pegs or just some, like, chits or something. And you are doing, like I said, you're doing this till you kind of lock, you're trying to block your opponent in so they can no longer play their pieces. And it's got a really nice look to it, because if you think about it after, because the pieces come out. A little bit fiddly, definitely fiddly with that whole having to snap pieces off, and it gets really tricky. Not really tricky. It feels really fiddly, especially when you have, like, you know, if you have the full complement or even more than two players. So if you have all the pieces all over the place, you know, and you're having to snap off and you're having to just make sure you're not knocking things over or pushing things or something. So there's a little bit of fiddliness to it, but it's got a really nice look. With the pieces coming up, it's definitely, I find, on the mean side in terms of abstract. Most abstract games are pretty mean anyway, but it's definitely on the mean side, because you're constantly having to think, okay, how am I going to stop them from moving in any given direction with your piece? So that's kind of my biggest gripe with the game, at least that I found. It's a little bit on the mean side, but It's definitely a fun experience. It's really super duper quick. Like, yeah, BGG says 15 to 20 minutes. I've had a couple of games where it's lasted with me and my wife like 10 minutes. And yeah, whoever has at the end of the game, whoever has the fewest number of segments of pieces in their pile at the end wins. And if it's a tie, which has happened actually quite a few times with me, if it's a tie, it's whoever's highest, whoever's head is highest wins. I think I go between whether it's a 3 or a 4. For me, I would probably say tis a gooder. I'll give it a 4. I throw those gooders around pretty easily. So I would say it's a gooder. As long as you know, kind of what you're getting into, that it's definitely more of an abstract game than you would think, and you have to play it as such, as an abstract game as well. You have to kind of be aware. But yeah, that's Loch Ness.
It sounds a lot like Blockus or Blocus.
Yeah, it's got a similar feeling to that. Yeah. Except with Nessie.
And is this a review copy?
This is, yes, I mentioned okay. that. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, you did? Oops. Oh, I swear I'm listening.
It's like, I don't know that Marvel Champions is like your favorite, one of your top two games or three games, and that you've played it billions of times. I have no, that's good. I'm glad you pay attention.
I try. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I do feel quite bad about it.
You should.
All right. Well, my pew pew and the last pew pew of this episode is Mercado de Lisboa, which came out in 2021, has current rating of 7.3 with 484 ratings. It plays 1 to 4 in 30 to 45 minutes and has a weight of 2.11. It is designed by Vital Lacerda and Julian Pombo. The art is by Pedro Soto, and it's published by Eagle Griffin Games. This is, okay, let's see, an abstract strategy economic game. The goal in this game is to get the most money. Okay. And you make, I'm going to use a buzzword here. You get money by synergizing.
Oh, God.
stands and restaurants with customers to make money. So picture a grid, if you will. Just close mm-hmm. your eyes and picture a grid. They are, but really it is. It's a, how many of, let me just quickly look at the board here. Du, du, du. Du, du, du. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5x5.
Okay.
5x5 grid. And there are these square tiles, which are stands. And there are grape stands and flower stands and fish stands. You get the idea. Tomato stands. And when you want to put a stand out on the board, you place it anywhere you want. And you put down one of your buildings. And then you have to pay $1 for every building in that row or column, mm-hmm. whichever is highest. So if you're placing the third building, you pay $3, for example.
Yeah.
Okay. The other thing that you can do on your turn is build a restaurant, which is basically like a modifier, which I'll explain. It makes the stands better. And these restaurants have matching, not matching icons, but matching themes. So, for example, a pizzeria goes with a tomato stand, and a hamburger stand goes with a meat stand. And then you have pubs, which are just wild because everybody likes to drink. And when you place a restaurant, you get a dollar for some reason. You just get money, which is cool.
That's how it works.
Yep. Pretty sure. And then there's also customer tiles, which go on the outer perimeter of the grid. So it's outside of the 5x5, and one customer can go at the top and bottom of each column and row, I guess, left and right. Okay. Mm-hmm. And customer tiles range from one customer to four customers. They're little heads. Mm-hmm. And they want different things. So maybe one customer wants meat and flowers. So on your turn, instead of placing a restaurant or a stand, you can place a customer tile. When you place a customer tile, you check how many stands in that column or row match what that customer wants. So customer wants chicken or meat, sorry. We got three stands of meat, and whoever owns them gets a dollar. Actually, that's not how it works. Okay, hang on. There's a little bit of math. It's kind of weird. So they count one for every, so you count, if someone wants meat, you count how many meat stands you have. So let's say two. And then for every restaurant that's adjacent to that stand that matches that type, you get another, we'll call them point, we'll say points. And then, so you're like, okay, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 6. And then you times that number by the number of customers on the tile. So like I said, there's some with one that goes all the way up to four. And that's how you make money. And money is what you want to do this whole game. However, if other people also have meat, when you place that customer down, they also make money. So there's a lot of trying to suck off of other people's work, but also not give them too much either. So there's a bit of that. The other trick with customers is that you cannot place, like you would think, okay, well, start with a four customer tiles because four times however many you have is going to be beneficial. Yes, good math. However, you need to have four buildings in that row in order to be able to place that customer. Anybody.
I'm sensing a lot of sarcasm from you as you're talking about this.
Oh, really? I'm trying to be thematic. This is maybe that's why it's coming across as sarcastic. You should be proud of me, Sean. Mm-hmm. I'm talking theme here. So you have to, in order to place a customer, you need to have that same amount of stands in a row or column. So you can't just start high and make a bunch of money. And the game keeps going. Oh. If there's already a customer represented at the end of a column or row that you put down, then you put down a new stand or restaurant, then you also got to do your little bit of math and get money. So you're really just trying to match things up and maximize and prevent your opponents from maximizing. Mm-hmm. And the game ends when there are four spaces left in the grid or four customer spaces left on the outside. And you count up your money and whoever wins or whoever made the most wins. And that's pretty much it. Bits. Fine. Good quality cardboard. The player buildings are nice. You get like a bunch of little wooden bits for them and they're all shaped differently. The art is clean. I'm not a huge fan of the art, but I think it's really just personal preference. I actually find that with a lot of Eagle Griffin games for myself. Just there's something that, yeah, but it's fine. The gameplay is good. It's actually super, super quick to explain. I did a poor job explaining the math. It's a lot easier when you have a board and you can point to things in front of you. But yeah, it's pretty simple to learn and pretty simple to play, like 30 to 45 minutes. It can end pretty quickly, so you definitely have to keep an eye on that. Because if people just start laying a bunch of tiles, suddenly the board is much fuller than it was. And that can feel somewhat sudden. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought this game was fine. I don't know. I feel like I need to play it a few more times. I think it's clever. I think it rewards being clever. And I think your first few plays, like it also rewards multiple plays. So you can get a feel for how best to maximize. Or maybe I'm just bad at the game. I don't know. But I definitely got a sense that, yeah, the better you got at this, the more clever you got with this. Which I guess is any game, but it really felt like that with this game. Like it could get, I could see this being a pretty intense game if you play against people who've played it a bunch. Mm-hmm. You know, it could get pretty good. I wonder about there being an inability to catch up if somebody starts doing really, really well. Like I feel like if you get some columns and rows set up really well, that align really well with the customers, which is you playing well for sure. I think possibly it's hard for folks to catch up. So I've seen it a little bit, but again, I don't feel like I'm playing this game at a level where I can definitively say one way or the other. It was just kind of a sensation that I got. Yeah, I felt like the game was overpriced for what it was. Like you're looking at a 30 to 45 minutes, somewhat light tiling game, which I would probably say should range from, we'll say, 25 to 40 Canadian dollars is what I would say would be an average. And this game, I think, was like 50, almost 55. So I felt that that was actually really overpriced.
Yeah.
For the game. Yeah.
You're talking like me.
Yeah. I don't know. Honestly, it's forgettable for me. But I feel like maybe I'm missing something. Who knows? But I give it a 3. I'm not selling it yet because I feel like there's more to explore. It's not bad, but it's not overly interesting either, I guess. So there you go. Mercado de Lisboa. A 3, maybe a high 2.
Whoa. Yeah. You're getting into one territory here.
I know. I'm just gonna start trashing all the games.
You should. Oh my god. You could have something more than a cannibalistic video game.
Hey, I know what you're talking about. I guess I must be listening.
You must have. It doesn't help that I feel like we've mentioned it every episode.
Well, that's what you got to do. It's all about repetition for me.
Oh yes. Speaking of which. Before I forget, I was on Chris and Philip invited me to be on the Boards and Swords podcast.
Yes.
And I mentioned the cannibal game, how we gave, because he was like, oh, what games do you want to talk about? I was like, well, we recently, we recently gave our first one. And of course, it was to a video game. But yeah.
Hilarious. Yes,
make sure everyone knows not to play the cannibal video game.
This is important. This will be Sean's legacy.
Yes. Don't play that ridiculous game.
Right.
Alrighty. Yeah, that's I feel like Eagle Griffin, unless it's those like
over the top.
Yeah, because unless they have those like small box ones, right? Like, yeah, like for sale theirs and like those. But unless it's not one of those, it's gonna be like, yeah, they're quite pricey for what they produce, what they make.
They are.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are. Oh, and I think this was supposed to be a play on the market, you know, the grid in Lisboa, right?
Yeah.
But I don't remember enough of how Lisboa worked. I think this is a lighter play on how that part of the game worked.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
With the synergizing and whatnot.
Hey, speaking of synergy. No, we were supposed to do it at the same time.
Oh, sorry. Okay, ready?
Synergizing. Bah!
That's our BGG thread spotlight. That was a spotlight sound for.
This is our bit wherein we use other people's comments on a BGG thread to make content for our own show.
Whoop.
And this one's just going to make me sad. Brass.
Yeah, sorry about that.
How many unplayed games are in your collection?
Mm-hmm. Was this the one that was old? Yeah, this one was old, but then it was like on the hot list, so I still went for it.
Gotcha.
So Dosky A, which is the original poster, said, I'm curious to know what you limit your unplayed pile to, if at all. At the moment, I try not to let it go above 10 games. How many unplayed games are you hoarding, and what games have you had for years that haven't made their way to the table?
I'm just staring at the microphone blankly right now. For a comedic effect that no one can see.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah. The Daily Grind says, I don't have any unplayed base games. I try not to purchase anything new if I have anything unplayed, although sometimes a pre-order Kickstarter might show up on its own.
That's what how I used to be.
I'm so jealous, Daily Grind.
Good job, Daily Grind. All right, Cookie Monster says, I am a collector. Nom, 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 nom. No, they didn't write that, but they should
have. It'd be hilarious if they did.
Always attracted to a new game that I just absolutely need to buy. Need. But then it sits there on my shelf. I hate myself for that. I tend to play a new game once and then move on to the next new thing. And that's a shame because a lot of games only shine after a couple of plays. So I decided to join the 10x10 challenge this year. Makes sense?
Yeah. Sure.
Doing something about something you hate. Good job, Cookie Monster.
Catherine says, I guess I'll be the odd one out. Looking at the other replies so far, my number sits at about 300, and I'm fine with it. It doesn't usually bother me that it might take a long time, sometimes years, before I play a specific game. I find the thought of not having any unplayed ones more disturbing. Kind of like a library in which I've read all the books and there's nothing new to discover. I also like punching and sorting components, looking at the box art, reading the rules, etc. So I do get some enjoyment from them, even though I haven't played them.
I thought that was such an interesting perspective. It was cool. Neat to hear how other people approach this hobby.
I'm gonna tell my wife that my games are like a library.
Yeah, you need something new to discover.
I wonder what she'll think of that.
Moonflower says, some people have a lot of unplayed games because they don't want to pay for shipping for each one, which would probably end up being another $50 to $100 instead of free. Makes sense to me.
Oh my gosh, yeah. The no shipping policy. The no shipping policy is like just the greatest thing establishments have ever created to get money out of our pockets.
Yep.
It's like, oh, I'm not going to pay for shipping. But I got to spend an extra $70, even though shipping was only $10.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty funny. And it's ubiquitous.
JP says, for me, I do not buy a game if I do not intend on playing it within the next week or two.
I have to ship from Bliss, so I can't do that. But that's a good approach, too. Yeah. Rose says, I think I start getting a bit stressed out by unplayed games when my count of real games goes above 2 for any length of time. But that's calmed down a bit since I read someone's comment. They are his savings for retirement when he won't be able to afford new games all the time. Now, if only I could stop feeling guilty for all my games that I've only played once.
Mark D says, I think I only have 2 unplayed games at the moment, along with a handful of expansions. If not for a limited game budget, I'm sure that number would be much higher. Now, if the question were about how long it's been since some of your games got played, I think I have a few that are going on a decade or more. But that's a different question.
It is. Yep. Yeah, we always talk about our shelf of shame, but we don't really talk about our shelf of played once. Or... how long it's been, our shelf of it's been a few years. Yeah. Monica Alita Forcell says, oof, I have too many. I am too poor at putting new games at the table. I often go for those I know the rules for properly. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. That's a real struggle, especially when you're tired and it's late at night and yeah. It's a lot of work learning a new game and getting it to the table. It really is.
Forrest Dunton says, I know a lot of gamers care about this or don't want any unplayed games in their collection, but I don't get that at all. I got probably 150 games I haven't gotten to yet, and I add to it every month. They sit right next to the books, video games, and vinyl I haven't gotten to yet. Eventually, I'll get to each of them, but by then, there will be equally more. I have no interest in ever catching up and having nothing new to experience. For me, the beauty of life and every aspect of it, from food to travel to games, is in regularly trying new things.
That's very similar to the library lady.
Yeah.
Hey?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. So, I thought this was interesting just simply because there were so many different aspects and different approaches to how people think about unplayed games and how and collecting in general. So yeah, I'm just curious, Sean, do you have like a system? Do you concern yourself about it? Do you have an ideal number?
I used to before COVID. I was getting pretty good, and then I used to. I would tag my unplayed games or my new games with a sticky note of a different color or whatever, or something, which I don't even remember because I've since taken them all off since nothing gets played now. And even we came up with that, which there's one game I got played, was the Pioneer Days with our shelf shaming bit on the show. So that kind of sort of helped. And the other games I've had on there I've actually sold. So, you know, that helped. I would like to play the games, because the reason I got the games is because I wanted to experience them. So it is in line with what that person says. But I also start at some point, which recently happened. Eventually, I start looking at all the unplayed games or games I haven't played, and I start getting very stressed and lots of anxiety over them. And I'm like, if I'm not going to get them played, they have to go. They have to get out of here. So I don't know if I have an ideal number or not, but much like anything with the games too, for me, it's space related. I have a very finite amount of space, or else they just start piling up and stuff. So it's got to do with that too. But I did, I did before when I would do game night, I would always make sure that at least one game was going to get new. One new game was going to get played every time I either went to a game night or had a game night here, or, tried to go somewhere where they, at the very least, even if it's a game I own that someone else had, be like, can we play that one? I want to learn it to know if I want to keep it or not. So like I try to, at the very least, get one per done. But yeah, it's kind of all out the window now.
And are you okay to sell a game that you've purchased but not played?
I don't like doing it because, that's why I tend not to, but I realize I have to because of, again, space. I recently did a pretty big purge and kind of compiled everything like you do on like a spreadsheet and stuff. And then, I sold maybe like 15 games recently and a bunch were sealed and games that I really wanted to play, but I'm realistically now being like, okay, am I going to get the place? And I'm trying really hard now. If it's like not a game I know I can play, I'm not going to get it. So, because we still don't, at least here where we are, we still don't know. I think game nights are still a considerable number of months away.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am with everything. I like to play. If I get the game, there's a reason I want it, right? It's like, even if it's just I hear you talking about it, because, I pay attention to you and like you, but whatever. If I hear you talking about it, then I go, and I'm like, okay, I really think I would like this game. I'm going to go ahead and get it. There's a reason I'm getting it, because I do want to play it. I don't want it sitting on my shelf unless, I don't know. There have been games where I'm sure I've gotten just for the art because they look so gorgeous. But, for the most part, I really want to play them if I buy them. So, yeah. But I've gotten over the whole not wanting to sell. Like before I was like, oh, if I bought it, like I need to play it. I need to punch it before I sell it. And like, I haven't done that now. I don't really do that anymore. I've gotten over that. I used to be really hung up on that.
Okay.
Yeah. How about you?
Yeah, some similarities. So I've talked before on the podcast about how I have a list. So when I buy a game and it shows up, it goes onto my zero plays list. And then I also have a one plays list. So that's why I kind of had to laugh at a few people's comments around like, well, don't ask me about unplayed, or ask me about unplayed. I can tell you good things, but don't ask me about one or more plays, because that's where the numbers start to get crazy. So I try to get two plays under my belt, I guess. And I am not like you in terms of moving on from not playing a game. Like, I would rather hold on to a game for 5 years and not play it, and then play it and get rid of it, than just get rid of it. So I've had some games that I've owned for a long time and still haven't gotten played for whatever reason. Usually it is related to player count. Mm-hmm. And then, when you do have that player count, Cult of the New always settles in.
Okay.
But I don't want to get rid of them because I want to know if I like the game or not. Mm-hmm. I'm like you in terms of the stress and anxiety. Like, I don't like having a huge amount of unplayed games, but I'm also not to the point where I would like purge or anything like that. I think part of the reason I created the list was just so that I felt, sometimes when you're stressed and anxious, you give yourself a way to feel control of the situation.
Make lists. Like, that's what I work with so many people who are like,
make a list.
I just want to punch them all. But yeah, I get so, you. I understand.
So that's how, and then I can track it, right?
Yeah.
And generally I'm pretty good, but yeah, there's definitely some games that have been like Power Grid, for example, is a game that I always wanted to play. And I purchased and I've had now for, I know, a number of years and just haven't played. And then there's a number of trick-taking games that haven't gotten played because of COVID. So those are just sitting there. Yeah, that's pretty much it, I think. I don't know if there's any other topics to touch on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I go through phases. I would say right now I'm in a bit of a meh about board gaming. Like I still want to play, but I just don't, I find I don't have the energy. Like my daughter doesn't go to bed until like 8. So it's like 8:30 until I have some time to myself. And quite often I am tired. And so the thought of learning something new and reading the rules and all of that is pretty overwhelming. Mm-hmm. But then when I'm like, really, there are phases where I'm like, all I want to do is play. And then it's a lot easier for me to get those unplayed games to the table. But I always have a list. Like I always have a shelf of shame, and I don't see that going away at the rate that I play and purchase new games. But yeah, as long as it doesn't get crazy out of control. So I do, because I have a list, I can tell you I have 18 unplayed games. And my collection is at, I don't even know, 400, 500?
That's pretty good.
And then I have 20 games with only one play. And I'm going to guess my two play is really high. Because then I'm not worried about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's a certain amount of pressure, you know? Like, sometimes when I'm standing in front of my shelves and I'm trying to pick a game, it's like, you know, sometimes it's like, you know what, just treat yourself, just play whatever you feel like playing. And it's like, whoa, like, is that what I should be saying to myself? You know what I mean? Like, but you always feel this pressure to play what you've purchased and play the new, and, you know, and sometimes it is like, I think that's why I enjoy Felduary so much. Cause at this point I've played enough of most of his titles. I can get to the table without reading the rules.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, yeah, there's something about just, let's play this game, set it up, and you go.
That's fair.
Yeah. Yeah, so there you go. That's our ball.
Ah!
And now we have our
next up.
Oh, wait. Yep, next up.
Next up.
This is our next up bit when we hype up the hype and discuss games we can't wait to fondle. I'm curious to hear about yours.
Well, I'm not going to make another joke. Because it's just too easy. But this was, yeah, so my first is, it's another Kickstarter. I know last time I did a Kickstarter too, and I know we have a Kickstarter bit. But I feel like Kickstarter is mostly what I'm aware of these days. But this is My Father's Work, which recently came out on Kickstarter from Renegade Games and designed by T.C. Petty III. And amazing art from Cold Castle Studios and Eric, a bunch of people actually, so I'm not going to get into it. But this is a game that I can't remember if it was like my second or third most anticipated game of 2020. And I know it won't be out probably. My guess would be until 2020. It's my second or third most anticipated game of 2021. I'm going to guess, given that it's just getting to Kickstarter now, it probably won't be out until 2022. So I'm assuming it'll be one of my most anticipated games of 2022. And your father was like a mad scientist, and you've discovered his work. And basically over three generations, so that's kind of where your campaign portion comes in, you're trying to complete his legacy. So your father or grandfather or great-grandfather, and you go over this, and you get bits of information as you go, and then you have to kind of do stuff to get more points as you're going. And it seems to have like a lot of different things mechanisms in it, but it also has, I believe, a spiral bound book for the locations and the places in it. It's got minis. It's got, I'm just kind of thinking from a kid, because I just, like, as soon as it came out, I was like, yeah, back, whatever. We're just backing it and just waiting. But it's got, like, it's got coins. It's got minis. It's got these, I think, these little, like, vial thingamabobs in there. So
I love thingamabobs.
Yeah, so super duper thematic. As well, so it's got and I'm sure there's stuff hidden that we don't know about as well, and it seems like it's been taking off really well on Kickstarter, which is nice. So hopefully, you know, more stuff will be added, but I'm super looking forward to this. It's right down my alley, and TC Petty does these, you know, really kind of thinks outside the box with things. So I'm super excited for this whenever I do get it in my hands.
And there's game trays, which you can never go wrong with game trays.
No, I feel like almost, we talked about this last week, I feel like almost game trays are now just expected for any
game. Yeah, yeah, like they've done really well.
Yeah.
But, you know, they make such a difference. Like, yeah.
They do. They're real. Yeah.
They do so good. I didn't realize this was going to be a Kickstarter. For some reason, I heard Man vs. Meeple talking about it probably during their most anticipated, and for some reason, I thought that this was, like, coming out soon. So I'm just looking at the Kickstarter now. There's 10 days left.
Yeah.
Cool. I'll have to look at that in more detail. All right. Well, mine is Witchstone. Which is coming out, I think, May, June. So soon. This is a game by Martino Chiachiera and Reiner Knizia. I don't know Martino. Let me just look up his... Oh, he does Deckscape. Ooh, okay. Ooh. And Detective.
Yeah, all those little deck building... Those little whatchamacallit games. Escape games.
A lot. Actually, quite a bit. He's got his name on quite a bit. Not a lot of games I recognize, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But... Oh, and Similo... Huh. Cool. All right. So I haven't heard a lot about this game, but it looks really interesting. So this is a dominoes game, and I think I really like the idea of dominoes. So that's why I picked up Renature. So what I get from this is that the dominoes represent actions. Mm-hmm. So when you, I think you play, so you have like this cauldron in front of you, and the dominoes are more like hex shaped dominoes. And if you match up a symbol, which represents an action, you get to do the action more times, I think. And then you can, because they're hex shaped, you can create clusters. So basically, you know, for every icon that shows up in that cluster, that's how powerful your action can be. And I'm not entirely sure. Like, they explain some of the actions, but it just sounds like a bunch of gibberish to me. But it sounds like there's kind of like a bunch of different areas that you're playing with in the game. Like, there's you're moving witches around on the middle of a, like in the middle board. There's something around a pentagram for collecting points and acquiring bonus tiles. There's moving crystals in your cauldron. There's advancing on a magic wand, and there's claiming scroll cards that boost actions and earn you bonus points. It almost sounds like a Feld to me in a way. Bunch of kind of mini games, and you're just trying to. So that's
very
all. Like
very colorful.
Yeah, they have a few. They have one game picture, and then the rest is just the box. And they've got a fairly decent description, but like they don't even have mechanisms listed. But it just, I don't know, I do really appreciate Reiner Knizia. I think he's a brilliant designer, and I like the idea of the dominoes and the actions, and then yeah, the board just looks really cool. So I'm excited for this one. I'm definitely want to check it out. Hopefully we'll hear more about it soon. There's like nothing. Yeah, are there even any videos or nope?
Don't look like there's anything.
Nothing. So hopefully something comes out soon, but I'm very intrigued. Very, very intrigued with this one.
Is there a I'm just looking to see. Someone says late April, early May for U.S. distribute. Oh, no. No. Production moved to April. Release moved to late May, early June for U.S.
Yeah. Okay.
So relatively soon.
Yeah. But, yeah. I don't know why it took.
It's a European release. They always do that.
Yeah,
they
there's never, not as I, much buzz.
I always love Eric Martin is always complaining about this, because I guess he's the one who probably does a lot of this stuff that, you know, the European, especially European designers, don't often take advantage of Board Game Geek and put the information there.
I wonder why.
Or the European companies.
There is a, I'm just noticing, oh, it's in German, though. There is a rule book. Oh, they have it in all the languages. Yeah, it's just all the languages in one file. The rule book is online, so I'll have to take a peek through that and see if I can understand it a bit more. But
okay.
I think it reminds me of Bonfire, too, which makes me excited. I don't think it'll be anything like Bonfire, but it still makes me excited by kind of looking
of
the same.
Okay.
I don't know. I can't explain myself sometimes. But yeah, looks cool. So that's Witchstone. Witchstone.
Which yeah. Cool.
Yeah, so that's it. That's episode 77.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before we close out the show, we want to say thanks again to our amazing listeners and our show sponsor, Board Game Bliss, a store where you can find an amazing selection of games from around the world, bringing joy to you and your loved ones. Don't forget to use the coupon code ATB-TAKE5OFF100 to take $5 off your order over $100. One use per customer, no other rules apply. The next time you are playing with someone who has a P, may we suggest you use that time to click the subscribe button and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Thanks again. Bye.
And before I say bye, go to meeplecrossings.com and pre-order our shirts.
Yeah.
And then tell us how awesome they are when you get them and show us pictures and stuff.
All so, those things.
All
yeah,
those
we
things.
Hope, we hope you like the design and...
And if you don't like them, it's Michelle's fault.
Right.
But you will like them. So it's fine. All good. They're going to be awesome.
Yes, definitely.
Now, bye.
Bye.